Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. The West Windsor Plainsboro School District near Princeton is, by all accounts, a high-performing district with strong academics and an admired music program, and that's all, of course, part of what attracts families to the area. But after some parents in the district worried the strong academics was coming at a cost to their children's mental health, the superintendent decided to make some changes to ease the pressure. But the changes are unpopular with some other parents in the district who primarily come from the district's Asian American community. That's at least according to a recent article in the New York Times. Here with me now to tell us how some of these changes are going in his district and dig into what the Times sees as an ethnic divide is the superintendent of schools for the West Windsor Plainsboro Regional School District, Dr. David Adderhold. Hi, Dr. Adderhold. Thank you for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
First, can you tell us, and we're doing this in part to cover West Windsor Plainsboro itself, and in part because I think there are a lot of other school districts around our listening area who might relate to this as a challenge. Tell us about the academic culture of the district and what was going on that prompted you to make some changes.
Well, Brian, again, West Windsor Plainsboro is a very successful district. Our students academically, by all standard measures, score off the charts. We're very proud of our students, and it's reflected in where they get accepted into college, their AP scores, whether it's their Park scores or in New Jersey, their HESPA scores in the past. So whether it's Science Olympiad competition, national robotics, international math competitions, our students,
do the
district proud and by all measures.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to then what we started seeing, and we've seen a trend over the last several years, I've been in District 7 years. Over the last 5 years, we've seen a steady decline in mental health concerns, whether that's depression, anxiety, suicidal ideations, issues of physical cutting, and whatnot. And last year, it sort of crested around 120 students that the district saw necessary to send out of district. Within that 120, we saw upwards of 40 students hospitalized in some fashion, whether it's for partial or full day inpatient or partial day hospitalization programs. And at that point, we definitely made some pretty strong decisions to make some changes with our academic program.
Was this happening, in your opinion, because school is too intense?
I don't know if school is too intense, but the pressures on students, I would say, are too intense. And over time, we've seen the pendulum swing to an extreme, where the importance of resume building, academics at all costs, has taken the day. The concept of resume building to get into elite colleges is prevalent, especially in high-performing districts. And as you indicated, it's clearly not just a WWP issue. But there is this achievement culture that I do think is weighing down on our children, and it's causing some incredibly negative repercussions.
So what did you change?
So we've had some areas that have been changing over time, and other areas of focus specifically that occurred this past summer going into this school year. So what I think happened in our community is in October, I put out a letter to the community that sort of outlined all the changes, because we do have some mobility in the community, and as students aged up, parents of an elementary program, let's say, would not necessarily be watching what we're doing in the middle school or high school. So we decided to put together like a white paper of everything that we have been working on over the last couple of years. And for those that maybe weren't necessarily following or it was newer to them, it came as some surprise to sort of the multitude of changes. So to give you an example, some of the things we've been working on. We instituted some no homework nights. Now, no homework nights were just pauses. It wasn't an elimination of homework. 2 years ago, we had simply four nights that happened to be Fridays. It was sporadic throughout the year of no homework nights where we just gave a pause. It started about 4 years ago in our middle schools, but because we have a pre-K 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 12 grade continuum, it was great that the middle schooler had no homework, but that means your fourth grader did, and the family didn't get an opportunity to enjoy the evening together. So we institutionalized it K-12 as a district. And this year we increased it from 4 to 6, but we also included the Thanksgiving, the winter, and the spring break. So, you know, and what we found is we're in positive responses from students. We definitely still are working through some of the logistics, and not everyone is honoring it the way we'd like but that's for us to work with our staff on. But at the end of the day, the intention is to just find moments of pause for families to be able to enjoy some time together. So that was one aspect of the change. We also made some changes with respect to our entrance and entrance criteria for AP and our honors programs. And really, we just tried to open up the criteria so that more students had opportunities for access. And what we've seen over the last 4 years is that our numbers have actually increased with respect to the number of students taking the test, as well as the number of students achieving well on the test. So our district average of over 2,200 AP exams is a 4.2 on a 5-point scale, which is quite remarkable with that many exams given. So there's an example where we made a change for greater access, which means more students could have opportunities. We weren't necessarily decreasing any kind of rigor, but we were opening up access. We also made some specific changes in recommendations regarding midterms and finals, and that was one of the more controversial recommendations. What we looked at is we said, you know, basically the midterm and the final, the historical 10% midterm, 10% final exam was sort of an archaic assessment that should not be worth 20% of one's overall average. So we made recommendations to eliminate what's been known as the standard midterm and final. We have now just the four quarters, 25% each for the quarter on the grade weight. We still have common assessments, and I think that's just a misnomer. We still have, in many of our subject areas, we still have cumulative assessment, but they're not the standardized midterm or final. It still happens within the quarter. But now when you look at cumulative assessments, you can think differently about the type of assessments you give. It doesn't have to be the traditional multiple choice or with the two essays type of exams. So that, again, has had some pushback because some parents would view it as, well, then you're not preparing children for college. And we don't believe that. Two, we believe the academic rigor and the excellence of our teachers day in and day out prepares the students quite well. But then we have some other indicators, such as over 80% of our students take at least one AP exam, and the PSAT test results that we have, which is a good predictability indicator for college acceptance. In college performance.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
We also made some changes around music. At our K-5 level in particular, I called it the right to squeak. This is simply maybe just a playful term in nature, but I am the husband of a music teacher, a former music teacher. I have many children in my family that play instruments, and I have a strong value on the arts. And what I saw in our district was sometimes the exclusion of some students from our music program, and I simply made the statement everyone has the right to squeak. So whether a student is receiving special education services or a student is new to our system, whether it's from another township or from another country, the idea that they should go to a study hall and maybe not perhaps enjoy the opportunities for music in their life was something that I didn't believe was acceptable, and we felt that everyone should have the right to pick up an instrument. And if it's not at the K-5 level, when we're talking about the developmental level of children, then when would it ever happen? So we instituted that concept of everyone has the right to squeak.
On the pushback that you've gotten, the New York Times plainly referred to it as, quote, an ethnic divide in the district. It's a mostly white and Asian district, and there are a lot of white families. There are a lot of Asian families of Chinese and Korean and Indian and some other descent and immigration status. Does that make you bristle, that term ethnic divide, or does that just reflect the reality of what's going on in the district right now?
I think that it was a snapshot moment in headline. If one was to come to our board meeting on that particular evening and look to the audience that the New York Times happened to be at, I could see how they would have viewed it as an ethnic or a cultural divide. I don't think it's a fair term. I believe there's support from all aspects of the community, both on those in support of the change and those against. Our community, to your point, is very diverse. It's our school community is 65% Asian, so that Chinese, Indian, South Korean, and other. About 25% white, 5% African-American, 4% Hispanic, and 1% just other categories. And so we have a very diverse community. We're proud of our diversity. We definitely have some difference of opinions of time, but I think that's much bigger, a bigger conversation just than just the educational system. And it's about our community working together and getting to know one another and coming to terms with our educational values. But I do believe that most parents want to see their children be successful, healthy, happy, supported, engaged. And I don't believe there's much disagreement on that. On that particular night that the New York Times happened to be in the audience, there was a board vote over a change to our mathematics program at the elementary level. And that did bring out a lot of folks in opposition. We knew it would be an unpopular decision to move that recommendation forward. We knew that a year ago when we started talking about making that change. At the end of the day, it's our responsibility as educators to make recommendations for what we believe is in the best interest of all children. And we move forward with that recommendation, knowing that we were going to have some public fallout from it. But I don't believe that our community is ultimately divided ethnically, culturally, racially, in the grand picture of what we want for our children.
Now, listeners, if you're a parent or you've got experience with either one of the two high schools in the West Windsor-Plainsboro district or a school that sounds like West Windsor-Plainsboro that is high-achieving but maybe high-pressure, give us a call and weigh in, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Is there a balance that schools can strike and are or are not striking, in your opinion, between keeping academic standards high and making sure students are so stressed out or making sure that students aren't so stressed out that they suffer from serious mental health problems, as was apparently happening in this New Jersey district at a higher rate in the last few years? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we're going to bring in another guest on this in just a minute. But Dr. Adholt, superintendent of the Plainsboro West Windsor Regional School District, before you go, a big part of why people move to places like your area is for the high-performing public schools. Are you conscious of that as you're trying to strike this balance between keeping achievement levels high and making sure students aren't too stressed out to function?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we recognize the value that the school system brings to our community, and we recognize that parents move to school districts for schools, often as the driver. So we're not trying to devalue the public education system. In fact, we're working to strengthen it. We're looking to provide our students with what we see as necessary skills for the 21st century, for life beyond the high school. And we're working to make sure that we're preparing students to live and work within a global environment, global economy, and ultimately that they're successful beyond the doors and beyond the gates of our campuses. So we believe that our students will be well prepared when they leave us, that it is our responsibility to help raise the bigger question about what are we striving for, and that there is more to our responsibility than just preparing students on the academic side of the equation. That it's our responsibility to develop their whole being, the whole child concept that ASCD, the Association for Supervision, Curriculum, and Design put out back in 2007. There's five major tenets there about students being healthy, safe, supported, engaged, and challenged, and really do believe in whole school, whole community mindset that it's our responsibility to prepare our students for.
One of the Asian American parents quoted in the Times article said that you just described, the whole student approach, is kind of a luxury that white families have, and I'm paraphrasing here, this is not the exact quote, but a luxury that white families have, especially white, more affluent families like might live in West Windsor, Plainsboro, relatively affluent, because being here, not being new to this country, they have connections in the professional world and can use those connections to get their kids a foot in the door when they do reasonably well in school. Immigrant parents have to do it for their kids on sheer achievement and merit in that respect. Do you buy that?
You know, it's a difficult perspective for me to fully buy into. Now, I do recognize that there are some challenges within the admissions process, and that if we look at some of the statistics within the admissions process, that there is definitely disparity and gaps within SAT scores, for instance, for Asian American Nation immigrants compared to white families, compared to African American and Hispanic families. So there is definitely some aspects to that statement that would definitely ring true, I would believe, or that I believe. But, however, I've also been an urban high school inner-city principal, and the concepts of the whole child fit in that community just as well as they do in a WWP or in more of an affluent school district. So the idea of developing a fuller sense for all children beyond just academic inclination only, and, you know, and bringing things like the arts to their lives and bringing strong academics and athletic opportunities and clubs and enrichments is something that we should be doing for all children. It's not specific to white families.
Dr. David Adderhold, Superintendent of the West Windsor Plainsboro Regional School District, thank you very much for coming on and talking through this with us. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for having me.
And my next guest is going to give us a bit more context on some of what we just heard. She's Jennifer Lee, professor of sociology at the University of California at Irvine and author of a book that came out last year called The Asian American Achievement Paradox. Hi, Professor Lee. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I know you were listening to the conversation I just had with Dr. Adderhold. Do you have an initial general reaction?
Yes. First, I'd like to applaud Dr. Adderhold for really taking into account the pressures that many students feel to get into the most competitive colleges and to really think through some policies that would help alleviate some of those pressures. I think I was a little bit perplexed about his framing of this divide as perhaps a non-ethnic divide, especially when the New York Times piece really did frame it as such. And so I was curious to know how he didn't see it that way, particularly when one of the programs that he wanted to dismantle, which is the early math program, was it's 90% Asian. So there are certain aspects. I think there his framing of the situation is trying to move away from what potentially is uncomfortable, which may be an ethnic divide in which Asian American parents, and they often are immigrant parents, have a different set of goals in terms of how they feel their children should be best prepared to go to college than perhaps native-born white American parents.
Is that different set of goals born of the pragmatic concern that I, you know, framed in a question?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's what you mentioned, Brian, actually, when you ended your interview with Dr. Adderhold, and this is something that I've said. I think all parents want the best for their children. All parents want to get their children the best educational opportunities to get into the best colleges so that they can get land really high-paying, high-status jobs. All parents want that, regardless of race or ethnicity or immigrant background. What makes these Asian immigrant parents unique is that they are highly educated themselves. If you look at the three groups that are predominant in his community, Chinese, Indians, Koreans, that make up about 65% of the student body in that high school, they're all very highly educated immigrant groups. So about half of Chinese and Korean immigrants have a college degree or higher in the United States. Among Indians, it's about 70%. And if you compare that to the average American, it's about 28%. So they're much more highly educated as a group. They come here in large part to secure the strongest educational opportunities for their children. Then they're moving into school districts like West Windsor, Plainsboro, and others so that they can assure that their children get the best education possible. They do this in part because they understand as immigrants, as non-whites, and for their children, as the children of immigrants, as non-whites, they probably feel that they have to work harder to have the same chance of landing a high status professional job as their white peers.
And sadly, sadly with a price to pay of more mental health hospitalizations and other mental health negative effects.
Yeah, and that is something that I think is a very important point that Dr. Adderhold brought up, and that's something that actually we address in our book, that the whole idea of success at all costs has a cost, of course. When I mentioned before, is I'm trying to explain that these Asian immigrant parents are not just completely driven and insane. I mean, they're in part really wanting to secure the best futures for their children. So that is what is at the heart of their pushing their children into getting the best education possible. Yet that has a cost that these Asian immigrant parents need to also understand. And that's something that I'm really glad that Dr. Adderhold and other people are thinking about. When we look at some of the mental health issues among Asian American children, we find that surveys show, for instance, that they have higher thoughts, that a greater percentage have thoughts of serious suicide, that there are higher rates of depression. And even in some surveys of elite college students, sociologists have found that Asian Americans may outperform other students in terms of academics, but they have lower self-esteem and lower self-efficacy and confidence. So there are certainly mental health issues that I think are important to address. And I'm glad that people like Dr. Adderhold are thinking about those.
Jennifer Lee from UC Irvine and author of The Asian American Achievement Paradox, and Kelly in Westport. You're on WNYC. Hi, Kelly. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
You went to a school?
Yes. I
like
went to a school very similar to the one you're talking about in Connecticut. And I just wanted to touch on the fact that I think that school is for, I mean, school is really for some people and it isn't for others in a bizarre way. And I think in communities like the one you're talking about and in the community that I'm from, there is an insane amount of pressure put on the students to perform consistently with the goal of getting into a very good school, college, and then getting a high-performance job. And I know that as a student under that pressure, I did not necessarily perform. It almost shut me down when I was pretty much convinced that I couldn't perform the way I was expected to. It totally created that anxiety. Whereas I have a bunch of friends who under that stress performed exceptionally well and they kind of thrived under that pressure, but then they would get to school and it to college, I mean, and it just kind of became a disaster. They didn't really know what to do anymore. They didn't have that pressure coming from their parents. They didn't have the one-on-one connections that they may have had with their high school teachers.
You mean they got into elite colleges and found that there was less academic pressure than
yes,
in high
absolutely. And I definitely, what Dr. Adderhold touched on about how it didn't really make sense that the finals and the midterms were such a high percentage, the cumulative work, I think that college professors have very different techniques when it comes to testing, and a lot of classes are not cumulative, and a lot of them are just kind of, I mean, test as you go. So the concepts didn't really transfer from high school to college, and I just think that's very interesting. And also to touch on the mental health issues, I know that I have a lot of friends who started to really struggle from depression and just even exhaustion as simply as that. And they started to rely on things like Adderall, and that became an issue. And then they got to school and to college, and it either became an addiction or it turned into something stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really hear you guys touch on that, but I think the mental health issues were extremely prevalent, but not necessarily talked about. There was kind of a stigma, and it's definitely under, I don't want to say underappreciated, but not recognized.
Professor Lee, do you want to react maybe to that part, that last part of what Kelly's been saying?
Kelly, I think that's really brave of you to admit all of this. And I think that a lot of students do feel the pressure. I mean, when in our research that we did for our book, The Asian American Achievement Paradox, we talked to many people who felt the pressure to perform, and they felt like failures when they couldn't meet this impossibly high standard. And failure meaning getting B's. I'm not talking about failures F's. And so one of the things we recommend in policy implications is to make mental health a priority in high schools and to understand the different kinds of needs of high school students and college students, to that institutions should think about how to train counselors for this different type of pressure that students are feeling. And also on the part of parents and students to not make mental health a stigmatization, so that just because you are seeking professional counseling doesn't mean there's something wrong with you, that not everyone is going to perform at that standard. That's just impossible. I mean, the standard is set so high that there's going to be stratification. It doesn't mean that you're a failure if you're not meeting the kind of impossibly high standard that's set. And as you mentioned, I think one of the terrific things that Kelly mentioned is that the kind of test-taking skills in high school are a specific set of skills. They don't necessarily translate in university settings where professors are much more interested in developing a creative and innovative sense of self. So I did like that point, too, that Kelly mentioned.
Kelly, thank you so much for adding a lot to this conversation. And Susan in Morningside Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And as I said, your screener, one of my children went to Stuyvesant High School where we had the exact same profile racial breakdown as the New Jersey system.
About two-thirds Asian, same as that particular New Jersey district we were talking about before.
Right. And about a third white. And I've been on homework committees the entire 20 years my kids were K through 12. I was on three different homework committees, and including at Stuyvesant. And there was this exact divide where particularly not necessarily Asian American parents, you know, parents who had been born in the U.S., but those who were immigrant parents where they really wanted their kids doing homework till 11 p.m. I mean, this came out at a PA meeting where I was participating in a homework. We were developing a program for looking at the homework situation. And doing research, being on these homework committees over the course of the years, I interviewed someone who's now at Stanford, Dr. Wahlberg, and actually Professor Lee may know him or not know him, but he had studied the school systems of Taiwan and Korea, and was bringing that ethos into his belief that there should be a lot of homework in the school systems. And we're really dealing with the fallout of that. And baby boomer parents who you know, came of age in the 60s and 70s would show up in schools and say, we didn't have this much homework. Why do our kids have so much homework? And that's how I got involved in this. And there really is no research basis for having 3 and 4 hours of homework a night, even as a senior in high school. The returns diminish above 2 hours as a senior in high school. There's no academic correlation. It's just, I really applaud, is it Dr. Vanderhoof?
My guest?
Yes.
Dr. Adderhold, who is the previous guest, the superintendent of the West Windsor Plainsboro School District.
I really applaud what he's doing, and it is, there is a big it's a bit of a cultural divide that parents need to understand is mm-hmm. happening in these schools and need to be able to assert what they want for their own children, I guess. But I would say the parents who want endless amounts of homework should maybe look to outside programs to put all
yeah.
that.
Yeah, or in a world with enough school choice, maybe families will just self-sort, assuming they have enough information about what's actually going to go into the, you know, go on in the high schools that they choose and their kids choose. So Dr. Lee, how would you react to Susan on a couple of points? One, do you agree that there is not academic literature that supports the idea that more than two hours a night of homework is actually academically helpful to the kids? And two, how do we solve the ethnic divide?
Actually, I was listening to Susan's points, and they were very insightful. One is that there are diminishing returns to too much homework. Students are giving up sleep, and you need sleep. I mean, anyone who's been sleep deprived or has a child or a puppy understands that you need sleep in order to function. The other thing that Susan mentioned, which is really interesting, which is that these are not just Asian American parents in these school districts, but Asian immigrant parents. And they're coming from countries in which that are test-taking cultures, meaning that the only way to get into a university is your performance on a national exam. And so here in the United States, we have grades, we have SAT scores, we have student recommendations from teachers and guidance counselors. We have a number of different metrics in which we can measure student performance. In countries like Korea, India, China, it's your performance on one national exam. And so it's very much a test-taking culture, and students are enrolled in supplementary programs starting in elementary school in order to get these students prepared for their national exam in high school to get into an elite college. And so she was correct in the sense that some of what is driving Asian immigrant parents about these very rigorous programs comes from the countries of origin in which they're immigrating. And remind your reader, your listeners, it is the most highly educated who are coming to the United States. And so they're reinforcing this kind of test-taking academic achievement culture.
Well, we're not going to resolve it here, but hopefully a little more insight for parents of all kinds from our previous guest, Dr. Adderhold, the superintendent of the West Windsor Plainsboro School District in New Jersey, and Jennifer Lee, professor of sociology at the University of California, Irvine, and author of a book that came out last year called The Asian American Achievement Paradox. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come. Stay with us.